20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is going on, Packer fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. It is great to be joined once again by the wonderful Carmen Vitale. You can find her on social media at CarmiV, of course, FoxSports.com. Carmen, it's been a hot second. I hope your offseason is treating you well. How have you been?
Honestly, it's just every week saying to myself, it'll get slower next week, and it never does. And that's just being an adult, I think. So it's been busy as always, but this is more like life busy than it is work busy, as much as free agency was absolutely crazy.
Yeah, every single year I convince myself of like, oh, the season's coming to an end. My life will start to slow down a little bit. And then it's like, oh, free agency's here. Oh, the draft is here. Oh, it's like, and then all of a sudden it's like everything all over again. And you have to go like work for those like things where a little bit like in season, some of the stuff comes to you a little bit more and like you have things to talk about naturally. And it's now it's like, oh yeah, that's right. Like I can't just like talk about Mecole Hardman. I actually have to kind of go and watch Mecole Hardman because it's not like I've spent a lot of time watching Mecole Hardman over the last couple of years. So lots to get into obviously today. I'm really excited to kind of break down what we've seen in free agency so far. For those watching and or listening, I told Carmen this right before we came on. We are recording this at Wednesday at 1:04 p.m. Central Time, 11:04 a.m. Carmen's time, and that is on March 19th. My goal recording this is I'm going to be out in Florida next week, so there is a hopeful possibility that this is airing like a week later. However, I never know if I'm going to need an emergency episode, so I don't know when you in the future are listening and or watching this. By this time, maybe Aaron Rodgers is a Minnesota Viking or the Packers have traded for Trey Hendrickson. We don't know those things right now. We only have the information that we have in front of us. So we're going to cover the NFC North and what's been going on in free agency up until the point of 1:04 p.m. on March 19th as best as we possibly can. But Carmen, as I use that disclaimer, we have had a pretty wild and crazy free agency so far, but not just from an NFC North standpoint, but just overarching thoughts on free agency and how the landscape of the NFL has changed so far this offseason.
Yeah, I think everybody learned from the Eagles example and they decided they were going to go after offensive and defensive linemen, try to build out their interiors before like, and kind of build from the inside out, which is not a new strategy, by the way. It's just maybe new to some teams, but it's always been a proponent. I've always been a proponent of that strategy. So I think that's kind of what struck me. And with the salary cap going up as much as it has, teams just haven't been afraid to spend money and to kind of move money around, whether that's retaining their own guys and, you know, paying Myles Garrett $40 million a year or going out and getting high priced free agents when they haven't normally done so, i.e. the Chicago Bears. And to some extent, the Green Bay Packers kind of paying more, I think, for offensive line help than I've seen them do in a while, at least.
Yeah. And I think to your initial point on that, I think the interior of those lines and just building in the trenches, like you said, nothing new here. General managers have done this a lot, but sometimes the blueprint changes from time to time. I think the Chicago Bears are such an amazing example of this in general, and we'll talk about them more in detail, but 2023 comes around and they go out and they kind of do their fun shopping. They get Rome Odunze, they get Keenan Allen, and obviously had DJ Moore and Tack already, but they had they go get DeAndre Swift and Gerald Everett, and they kind of go and get those weapons and prioritize that to go along with Caleb Williams, but sort of maybe forgot some of the trenches. And then this year they reverse course and are like, all right, we should probably do a little bit of shopping in the trenches, and did that in a pretty significant way. And I just think you see teams look at Philly and they're like, well, they have a Saquon Barkley and an AJ Brown and a Devontae Smith and some very clear playmakers. They go and rebuild their secondary in the draft, getting Cooper DeJean and Quinion Mitchell. But if you look at the real strength of that team, offensive line and defensive line were the very first two things that sort of come to mind. And this is a copycat league. And when you see a team put a blueprint together, teams are going to do their best to kind of copy it. And I think we've seen that to a large extent this offseason.
Yeah, I agree.
As we sort of, again, continue to kind of look at free agency as a whole, you had a great article over on Fox Sports talking about some of the best bargains of free agency so far. So I don't want you to have to spoil the entire article. If anyone hasn't checked it out yet, make sure to go check that out over on FoxSports.com. And of course, Carmen wrote it, so just check by Carmen Vitale and it's out there. But just maybe a couple of names that stood out to you as some of these bargains in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most obvious one was obviously Chris Godwin with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers being retained and reportedly forfeited, you know, upwards of $20 million to stay home. But this was something I thought always made sense for Chris just in general, because no one's going to give you as much grace as the team that knows you very, very well when it comes to working back from injury. And that's what Chris Godwin is going to be attempting to do again this season, which was heartbreaking for me to see. You know, last year it finally looked like he was back to kind of his old self, because in 2023, coming off of that ACL, it was he just wasn't the same dude. And you thought maybe he would never be the same dude. And then, you know, flash forward to 2024 season and he comes right out the gate. He's killing it. He looks back to the old Chris Godwin and then again suffers another season ending injury, which was just heartbreaking. But, you know, he knows the system in Tampa. He knows the quarterback in Tampa. He knows the guys he's playing around in Tampa. He knows the coaches in Tampa. They in turn know him. And because he's a homegrown product too, I just felt like that was, I don't know, you know, I can't confirm or deny the $20 million number that he was going to, you know, he could have signed for more, but I do know that that's a situation that him and his wife, Mariah, really wanted to stay in, and they really, really love Tampa. They do so many good things to that community. So the Bucks benefited and they got to hang on to a guy that was really, that again, could have, whether it was $20 million or not, could have fetched a lot more on the open market. And it would have been a real headache, I think, seeing some of these receiver contracts for the Tampa Bay to have replaced Chris Godwin with a veteran. And then you're always kind of taking a gamble in the draft, although they do draft very well as well. So that was the biggest one that stuck out to me. I do think that Detroit got DJ Reed at an incredible value, especially when you see what Derek Stingley just signed for. Those contracts are topping, you know, what, tens and tens of millions of dollars. And so I really do think that getting DJ Reed, although I know he's had some injuries, I think getting him for that, and if provided he can stay healthy, that is something that, I mean, Detroit, I think, upgraded on. And you know, I think that was really great value on their part. So there's a couple other guys. There's some offensive linemen in there. I think I wrote about Mekhi Becton going to the Chargers because I really like just what Jeff Stoutland was able to do with him in Philadelphia and figure out, hey, this 6'7", 330-pound guy, he should be a guard, which clearly, like, I mean, that's like a prototypical tackle build. And to move a guy like that inside after seeing him and identifying those traits, I think was just genius. And so for him to now kind of be playing at the right position, let's hope that it really is. And I think that the Chargers got a good one. And if not, I mean, that contract seems pretty easy to get out of as well after a year. So those are some of the guys that were in there. There was like kind of all different position groups. I think the Bucks were big winners because I also think they got a bargain with Hassan Reddick, provided that he plays and he plays up to the level that we saw 2 years ago and the year before that as well. So, yeah, maybe there's a little bias in there, but I do think the Bucks pulled it off really well. Yeah, Chargers too. They got Najee Harris as well as Mekhi Becton. So I like both of those.
Couple things about those three. First of all, I love it for Chris Godwin because, as you mentioned, he has two big free agency periods in both of the times right before he has devastating injuries, which I'm sure affect his market in some real capacity. So love that for him that he was still able to kind of, well, end up where he wanted and still have those choices out there. Still got a big payday. And then the other thing that I always look for too is, it's one thing to just go out in free agent shop, even if you're getting some of these players at great bargain rates, but the thing that I always love is players that fit very well with the system that they're going to. DJ Reed in Detroit, he is a Detroit Lions type player. He is scrappy. He is feisty. He's that ankle biter type. Like, he is going to fit in Detroit immediately. Annoying as a Packer fan, but from an NFL standpoint, it is a perfect fit within their culture, within their defense, and he's going to be very annoying to play against. And for Mekhi Becton, you talk about a bigger offensive lineman going to a Jim Harbaugh offense where they're going to pound the rock. Like, this makes all the sense in the world going from Philly to the Chargers. I think he's going to see, you know, or be able to carry over the success that he had in Philly, bring that to the Chargers and fit in perfectly within that scheme as well. So it's not only that these are, I think, good bargains and they're good values, but they also fit very well with the teams that they're going to.
Yeah, I think so too.
What I want to go over is the four NFC North teams and kind of what they've done in free agency up to this point, and just kind of talk through the good, the bad, the ugly, some of the things that you're sort of seeing and how maybe it changes these teams moving forward. So we'll start with everyone's favorite, of course, the Green Bay Packers. Up until this point, they lose TJ Slayton, Eric Stokes, Josh Myers, Eric Wilson, Corey Ballantyne, and AJ Dillon. They add McCole Hardman, and then Nate Hobbs, as well as Aaron Banks. And then they retained Isaiah McDuffie and Brandon McManus. So that has been the Packers offseason up until this point as we're recording right now. Thoughts on what they've done to retain a couple of their own, sign a few on the outside, and then maybe lose some externally as well?
Yeah, it's a very neat little free agency package if I've ever seen one. I like what the Packers did, honestly, because I keep saying this when it comes to going out and getting Aaron Banks. And I know people are like, came in relief and was he really worth that and all that other stuff. But insurance is expensive. And that's what Aaron Banks is, because you just invested very heavily in your quarterback in Jordan Love the last offseason. And to give him that contract and then to see the injuries he had to fight through last year, clearly, that's unacceptable. It derailed so many things that the Green Bay offense wanted to do last year, had no continuity. We've talked ad nauseum about all the things and the domino effect that those injuries to Jordan Love had. So, I mean, in any aspect of life, insurance is expensive. And that is what Aaron Banks is. I like going out and getting a guy that still has some upside, but also has experience. And we know how close Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan are. So I have to think there's some carryover as far as the scheme goes and what Aaron Banks is going to be expected to do along the Green Bay offensive front. So I really liked that. And then I honestly was a little surprised that there wasn't more movement on the defensive side of the ball from Green Bay, given the fact that they switched schemes for the first time in 15 years last year with Jeff Hafley as their new defensive coordinator. And we talk about this a lot. Defensive schemes are as fluid as ever because the nickel package has risen to being more of a base package anyway. And you're always, you're utilizing four-man fronts in those situations usually. So that isn't indicative necessarily of these base packages, but what these base packages are indicative of are the kinds of players that you have on your roster. And clearly we saw, at the trade deadline, trading Preston Smith, all of that kind of stuff, realizing the guys that were going to be able to make the shift and the guys that weren't, or, because of their skill set, their body type, whatever it is, they just don't necessarily fit in with Jeff Hafley's defense anymore. And I really thought there was going to be a little bit more as far as defensive turnover. Now, we lost a few guys. And like you said, I retained Isaiah McDuffie. I think that he's one of those guys that makes that jump. But I would expect a pretty defensive heavy draft if I was a betting person, which I'm not because I'm terrible at it. But if I was, I would bet on a pretty defensively heavy draft to kind of round out the vision that Jeff Hafley has for this defense in Green Bay.
Defensive heavy drafts are the Packers specialty. That is their usual MO as they try to continue to usually upgrade that defense. I do agree with you though. And not only just because obviously they have some needs and that pass rush group in that front four, like you mentioned, but it was really sort of obvious this past year, the players that were really successful in this defense, Xavier McKinney, Evan Williams, Javon Bullard, Edgerrin Cooper, were the players that they acquired for Jeff Hafley's defense. Mm-hmm. And the ones that were struggling a little bit, maybe not having the seasons that a lot of people expected of Preston Smith up until that point where they traded him, but Rashawn Gary, Kenny Clark, Quay Walker was up and down a little bit, Eric Stokes, those type of players struggled making that transition into Jeff Hafley's defense. So I was excited in a way to be like, oh, he's going to get more players specifically for this defense. And when we saw that last year, that was a very good thing. They do get Nate Hobbs. As you mentioned, there is still a draft out there, but there was a little bit of an inkling of like, could they add maybe one more big piece specifically to this Jeff Hafley defense that could maybe even unlock it at another level?
Yeah. And I do think that is probably, it's a good draft to need any defensive lineman anywhere along the defensive line, like whether that's interior or some of these edge rushers. It's a deep draft, even if it's not really, really flashy. Although I do think that there's some real talent at the top of this draft that people are, that's worth getting excited about. But I realize that not everybody gets excited about the trenches like I do. I think that this is a great draft to need defensive line help. And I expect the Packers to spend a premium pick once again on somewhere along the defensive line, whether that's interior or on the edge.
Tradition unlike any other. The Packers going probably with some sort of project defensive lineman early in the draft. It is something that they tend to do very often. Let's go with the division winners from this past year, the Detroit Lions. Really interesting offseason just in general. They don't win a playoff game. It's a massively disappointing playoff performance after an incredible regular season. They lose, of course, their two coordinators, Ben Johnson to being the coach in Chicago, and then Aaron Glenn to being the coach in New York. They lose Carlton Davis, Kevin Zeitler, Fatu Melifonwu, Kendall Wilder and Jonah Williams. They add DJ Reed, a few other guys, Kyle Allen, Grant Stroud, Roy Lopez, and Kenny Aboah. But really, DJ Reed's the main one there. We kind of talked about him already. They retain Dan Skipper, Craig Reynolds, Tim Patrick, Levi Nwuzirike, Pat O'Connor, and Marcus Davenport, which was kind of an interesting one. But your overarching thoughts on this Lions offseason so far?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think the Lions, as far as the roster goes, really had much to address. And I think they did in DJ Reed. I do expect them to probably add to the offensive line a little bit more because that's something that they want to keep as a strength. Maybe the interior of the defensive line, too, just to keep that rotation up. But they have some really good guys on the interior there. You're getting Aiden Hutchinson back as with the Detroit Lions. So that is like the big piece to this defense that I think is really going to put it back over the top. So you didn't need to do a whole lot if you were the Detroit Lions, and you promoted from within. I think the biggest question mark with Detroit right now is obviously how is this coaching staff going to rebound from losing both of its coordinators and really, really good coordinators. They lost them because they were now head coaches. You look at the defensive side of the ball in particular. I like what they did with the coaching staff in general because they elevated Kelvin Shepard, who already has the locker room. I mean, these guys absolutely adore Kelvin. He's a former player. He knows how to command the room. He's really smart too, and he's seen so many things, and the way that he teaches things from everything that I've heard from the players and from other coaches there, he knows how to kind of relay all of that information and really get guys to internalize it. So I'm not worried about him being a first-time defensive coordinator in that sense. But what the Lions also went out and did is they went and they got Casey Rogers to be their defensive line coach, who is a guy that has been in multiple systems. He's been all over the league. He spent the majority of his career with Todd Bowles. You know he likes to do those fun things up front as far as doing different stunts and whatever with your defensive line. He adds so much experience. And from what I've heard already in those meeting rooms, coaches are like, wow, like this guy has so much knowledge. He has worked with so many different guys. He's figured out so many different systems, and he's seen everything, you know, from an offensive perspective, and with having all of that experience as a defensive coordinator, as a defensive line coach. So adding a guy like that to be a resource for Kelvin Shepard, I think it will dramatically improve Detroit's chances of just kind of continuing on and getting over the fact that they lost Aaron Glenn, who I do love, and I think he's going to do really well in New York. But Ben Johnson actually talked about this in his opening press conference about how the roster and the structure of the way that Detroit is set up, he's like, it doesn't really matter who the offensive coordinator is. And I thought that was a little petty at the time too. Like, oh, like I set everything up, and so now it doesn't matter. And like, he can still take credit for how well Detroit does on offense. Like, that's the kind of chess that Ben Johnson plays in his mind, which is hysterical. But I do think that there's some merit to that, just given the roster, given the talent that they have, and given how well Detroit drafts. I mean, this roster really, it's going to make things so much easier on these coaches, I think. And I think it's going to make it so much easier for them to get over losing all of the staff that they did, because they still have Dan Campbell too. And Dan Campbell clearly knows how to evaluate and identify coaching talent, because he's done it and he's elevated his guys time after time to really good results.
Yeah, I'm so intrigued to see how this Lions team, the big ones that you mentioned, the coordinators leaving, how the new coordinators, you know, kind of produce and function within that team. And then Aiden Hutchinson, it cannot be overstated. This was one of the best players in the league at the time that he went out via injury. And losing him was so unbelievably massive. And there's just no way to replace that. They brought in Za'Darius Smith. I should have mentioned, too, they did lose Za'Darius Smith as well, at least as of now. But outside of that, getting him back is going to be a massive, massive addition to that team. They basically trade out Carlton Davis for DJ Reed. They'll replace Kevin Zeitler in some capacity, I'm sure. But this is a team that still has a ton of talent on it. And the biggest thing is getting back Hutchinson. And they're going to be a formidable opponent for anyone that's going against them next year still.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Bears. They're kind of key losses are really none. Coleman Shelton, the center, Jack Sanborn to some extent, you know, Larry Borum, Jake Martin, Byron Coar, Darrington Evans. There's not much there in the losses category. They add Jonah Jackson via trade, obviously somebody that Ben Johnson had familiarity with in Detroit. Joe Tooney from Kansas City, Drew Dolman, the center from Atlanta, completely remake that offensive line, then go on the other side of the trenches, Grady Jarrett and Dio Denigbo. Olamide Zaccheaus is a wide receiver that I actually think is a little bit underrated. I like that signing for them. And then Durham Smythe, the tight end, that is going to be another piece that fits very well within Ben Johnson's offense. They retain Tre'Varius Moore, Scott Daly, Travis Homer, Stephen Carlson, and Doug Kramer. And then, of course, new coaching staff, Ben Johnson, et cetera. So that has been sort of the Bears offseason in a nutshell. Thoughts on them?
Yeah, they're doing things that I've wanted them to do for years when it comes to building out through the trenches. And really, I mean, this offseason has been so unique for the Bears in the sense that they went out and they got the highest coveted head coaching candidate that they could, and they paid him. They let him fill out his staff with a mix of experience and young guys and whatever, and they paid them too. And now it comes to free agency. They executed some really aggressive trades, and they also signed a few high-priced guys. Like, Drew Dolman is now the second highest paid center in the league. They're like, we're not messing around with this. We're not trying to get cute with it. We're not trying to get the best guy we can for the lowest price. We're going to get the best possible center we can, and we're going to pay him. And same thing with Grady Jarrett. I mean, I know he's at the, kind of inching towards the tail end of his career, but they made him an offer that made him not want to look elsewhere and made sure that they were going to get that guy on that side of the ball. And so I really do think that they're going about things the right way. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to work because, these guys have not played together and who knows the things that the injuries that could happen and this, that, and the other. And that's kind of the risk with, I think, a lot of the guys that they did acquire. A lot of them have injury histories. And a lot of them are older and all of that kind of stuff. So, you wanted the experience, and I think that that was the right call, but you are running the risk now of these guys are older and injury prone. So who's going to go down? Because it's a when, and how do you account for that? And so that's why I think the draft is going to be so interesting to see like who they really go after, how they build out their depth, because you're going to need quality depth. And that's something that Ben Johnson has already talked about in some of his press conferences, saying, is with the offensive line, for example, he's like, it's not just the front five. It's not just the first five. It's the sixth, the seventh, the eighth, because those guys, for one reason or another, are going to play significant snaps for you. And so you need to make sure that those guys are sound too. So I don't expect that the Bears are done. They're done with the splashy signings because their cap just won't let them do anything else at this point.
Right.
But I am thrilled. My favorite signing by them is Drew Dolman, because I've been begging them to get a true veteran proven center, especially when, it was clear that they were going to take a quarterback with the first overall pick and they were going to get Caleb Williams. I was begging them. They went out and got Coleman Shelton, but that wasn't enough. Like, I'm like, I need a guy that really knows what he's looking at, that's done it before for years and years and years. And you really couldn't have landed if you weren't going to get Frank Ragnow from Detroit, which you can pry him out of Dan Campbell's cold, dead hands.
Right.
You were going to get a guy like Drew Dolman, who, yes, has had some injuries last year, but the pedigree he comes from, being the son of an offensive center and an offensive line coach, going to Stanford, having all of these, he's just incredibly intelligent, but then also matches that intelligence with the physical traits. And I was talking to some league evaluators about him, and even some former offensive linemen, centers. Tough as hell is something that was used to describe him. Just very smart, athletic, and really knows what he's looking at. And that's something that can just benefit Caleb Williams tremendously. If you have a guy that can really take all the information that he's seeing from the defense or what his fellow offensive linemen are telling him, digest that all and make some decisions based on that, or at least relay it in a way that allows Caleb Williams to make some quick decisions about it. That's what you need, and that's what Drew Dolman can do. So I'm thrilled that the Bears went out and got him. I just hope he stays healthy now. I keep joking too. I'm always the one preaching tempering expectations. You need to see how this plays out, yada, 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 in Chicago. This is the first time that I really do feel optimistic about the direction they're headed under Ben Johnson, and who, again, needs to prove himself as a head coach, but also the talent they've acquired and the strategy with which they seem to be team building here. I think it's great, solid, sustainable, all of those things. And I finally feel like they're on the right track. So hopefully it yields results, because if not, I'm out of ideas.
after kind of going again for those desserts last year with all the playmakers, they got their right. their vegetables, their the meat and potatoes.
Yeah, get your meat and potatoes.
They got the lines, right? That's what
I like
they needed
that. I like that analogy.
You're welcome. You can use that. So a couple things. The Dolman thing is smart because, again, what you want to do is try to make things as easy and digestible for Caleb Williams as possible as he gets familiar with a new system. And just the more that you can take off his plate, the better. And adding a super smart center to be able to make some of those calls and checks and communicate with him, that makes things easier for Caleb Williams. That's a really nice check mark. The other thing here, the things that I love is, they went the right direction this year in going with the offensive line and the defensive line and really addressing those things that, again, they kind of ignored going into last year. And those were things that really needed improvement, especially the offensive line, to give Caleb more time. And I think that's going to serve a huge purpose. The only thing I don't like, and you kind of mentioned this as well, is it once again kind of feels like there's a couple different wavelengths here of like Dolman fits the age that they're going with. Odenigbo fits the age kind of that they're going with. They're a younger team, but then there's also like Tooney's like what, 31, 32 years old. Yeah. And then Grady Jarrett's kind of at the tail end of his career. And it's like, you would have maybe loved to have seen, like, I could have even seen like an Aaron Banks at the Packers sign, maybe making a little bit more sense for Chicago as that younger offensive lineman to kind of fit with everything. But that's probably, you know, picking nits, if anything, at this point. And I do think ultimately the fact that they addressed the trenches in a significant way was a really smart way to go. And obviously, again, as a Packer fan, it pains me to say that.
I totally understand coming from the fact that, yeah, some of these guys are on different timelines and with Grady Jarrett and Joe Tooney. But with Joe Tooney in particular, I really understand the signing too, because, and I appreciated it because he's been to the mountaintop. He's been to the mountaintop four times with different teams. He knows what it takes to win. And I think that's something that this locker room needs. Maybe it's not, he isn't a Bear for very long. Maybe he's only a Bear for a couple of years. But what he's going to bring to the locker room is that experience and saying, hey, this is how we did things. This is why it yields results. And these are the results that it does yield. And you can't argue with that with a guy that has four Super Bowl rings. That's something that this locker room desperately needed, because this is not a locker room. This is not a team that knows how to win. And the more you can infuse that roster, you know, responsibly, I should say, with that kind of experience, with that kind of knowledge, I think the better. And that, I think, is the role that Joe Tooney was brought in to play. It's why you traded a draft pick for him on top of knowing you're going to have to pay him. It's because of what he brings from just a team building and a culture standpoint. And everybody I've talked to who has played with him, who knows him, just, he's just such a humble, and like even talking to him, like seeing his press conferences and stuff, he's so humble, and you would never know that he has four Super Bowl rings if he didn't have a Wikipedia page.
Right.
So that's something that I think is really going to pay dividends for the Bears from a culture standpoint. When you're talking about figuring out how to win, Joe Tooney's done it multiple times. So just ask him, and it seems like all of the guys are kind of defaulting and looking to him to kind of lead that unit, especially, which is in turn going to lead the entire offense.
Is there a Carmen Vitale Wikipedia page? Are you no. Wikipedia worthy? Not yet.
I'm not Wikipedia worthy. Maybe one day.
What's the cutoff there? Do you think, like, I'm assuming, like, does like Kay Adams has to have like a Wikipedia page, right? I would assume.
Funny enough, so Kay's a good friend of mine, and I've thought about this before, because like she actually didn't have a Wikipedia page for a long time.
Yeah,
and she does now. She does now, but like for a very long time she didn't have one. I was always shocked by that, because I was like, everybody knows who Kay is.
Yeah, right. All right. So you gotta
get I'm not anywhere close to Kay's level, but maybe one.
You and I have work to do, Carmen. We both have work to do to get to the Kay Adams level. This it's amazing. Someday, like you said, someday. I don't even know if that's a good thing to have one or not, but it is an interesting thing nonetheless. All right, let's. I would just wanted to touch base on the two things. You need those standard bearers within your team, right? And he has the ability to be that standard bearer for them, and they probably need a couple of those in that locker room. And for that reason, I agree with you. I do think it makes a ton of sense. Last but not least, of course, we have the Minnesota Vikings. The big one, they lose Sam Darnold over to the Seattle Seahawks. Cam Bynum is gone. I've always really, really liked Cam Bynum.
Yeah, that was honestly the most surprising.
I know. He's a really, really fun player. They have the depth in that secondary still, but overall, that's an interesting loss. Patrick Jones, Daniel Jones, Garrett Bradbury, Trent Sherfield, Johnny Munt, Nick Mullins, Jerry Tillery. They add in Will Fries, Jonathan Allen, Isaiah Rogers, Ryan Kelly, Javon Hargrave, Jeff Okuda, Tavier Thomas, Justin Skule, and Eric Wilson from the Packers. And then really the only kind of player that they've retained so far, interestingly enough, has been Byron Murphy in that huge contract that they gave him to stay at corner for them. Thoughts on the Vikings offseason?
Yeah, the huge contract that instantly aged well when Derek Stingley signed for $30 million a year. I love what the Vikings have done. I don't think that they were that far away as far as the roster went. I love the fact that they went heavy on the interior offensive line because I think that tells you a lot as to what their plans are and have always been for the most part, which is that they're rolling with JJ McCarthy. And I know that the report came out where Diana Rossini actually was the one to say they're not in or out on Aaron Rodgers. They're just not going to make a decision on him anytime soon. And they, with the full understanding that that means he could sign elsewhere in that time, and they're okay with that.
Yeah.
I don't really think Aaron Rodgers makes a whole lot of sense for what the Vikings are trying to do long term. I think they absolutely are going to add a high end backup to kind of insulate against those first few games of JJ McCarthy's, just seeing how he's going to, you know, work back from injury. He did suffer a couple of setbacks during the season and what have you. So you hope that he's on the right track now, but all of that time then, instead of developing, that time was spent rehabbing. So he's got a long road ahead of him still when it comes to developing as a quarterback, but the whole plan really on its face hasn't changed. And no. The whole thing that I think the Vikings are banking on, it's not just JJ McCarthy, it's Kevin O'Connell. And either you trust him or you don't. And I do think that all the actions the Vikings have taken prove to me that they do trust Kevin O'Connell to get JJ McCarthy ready, whether that's right at the beginning of the season, I don't know, but they've done a hell of a good job of insulating against that learning curve for JJ, where you're not going to need to expect much out of the quarterback position in Minnesota, at least in the beginning of the season. You don't really need him to go out and be any sort of world beater or win you games or whatever. You've got a defense that can do that for you, at least in the early goings. And then you've got plenty of offensive talent. You've now fortified that offensive line in front of him, so he should have all the time in the world back there in that pocket. And we know that he's more mobile than people give him credit for. He's very athletic. Hopefully he still will be after this injury. But I really think that this was the plan all along. And I get it's hard to let 35 touchdowns walk out the door, but that was never the plan. The plan was never to hold on to Sam Darnold. He was a bridge. And I do think that Daniel Jones leaving probably kind of messed things up a little bit, where they were like, we thought you were going to be our high end backup. But if Daniel Jones has the chance to start elsewhere, you can't blame him, obviously, for that. And I trust that the Vikings will figure out the quarterback position pretty much more than any other position because of Kevin O'Connell, because of Josh McCown, their quarterback's coach. I mean, we've seen it time and time again in both small and longer timetable sample sizes. You know, you look at what he was able to do at Josh Dobbs right when Kirk Cousins went down, or you look at what he was able to do with Sam Darnold all of last season. I trust him when it comes to the quarterback position, and I trust that they know what they're doing when it comes to that, especially now that they've beefed up the trenches too, where that to me signals, hey, we're just insulating against having a rookie quarterback. We're not going to want to expect too much out of him right away, but he is our guy and he is our long-term solution. And that really hasn't changed.
I should have mentioned too, also to kind of fortify that, traded for Jordan Mason from the 49ers as well.
Yes, from the 49ers.
Yeah, the running game.
So him and Aaron, and paid Aaron Jones. So you have like a really good tandem now, I think, in the backfield behind a line that is now going to be, should be in any case, a really good run blocking offensive line as well.
Yeah, I think the two biggest wild cards in this entire division are the two second-year quarterbacks, Caleb Williams and JJ McCarthy, what they can be in year two. Obviously, for McCarthy, it's basically like his rookie season, but Caleb Williams year two, that changes the division pretty, you know, in a pretty significant way. If those two can go out and ball out this upcoming season, that again changes the division pretty significantly. If Williams has some of the same struggles, or McCarthy, his knee doesn't cooperate, or he just isn't the guy that they expected, again, that changes it to maybe a little bit more friendly for Green Bay and Detroit in those situations as well. So those to me are the two big wild cards. I know Fox Sports had an article, some of the biggest winners and losers in free agency, Packers, Bears, Vikings all make that winners list. So it sounds like this division once again had a good offseason.
Yeah, they did. I mean, Bears are the offseason champs, what, three years running now? So we'll see how that ends up working out. They need to take a snap. No games are won in the offseason. I understand that more than I think most of Chicago. But like I said, this is the first time I'm allowing myself to be a little optimistic. I hate calling them winners and losers. That's just the headline of the article that everybody uses, because at the end of the day, we really don't know how these moves are going to age, and we don't know what the impact of these moves is going to be on either side. So really, any of the guys that I labeled like losers, it was more of like, I don't get this yet. Maybe I will,
right?
But I don't get it yet. Like, it's confusing to me because I don't know what you're like, I don't know if you know who you are. That was that, like, I don't want people to get mad at me because, like, I'm not calling anybody a loser at this point. If, you know, I who am I? Who am I to say that? I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what it's going. But as far as winners go, it was based on people that are teams that I really thought got better and improved drastically. And I think that, you know, the Bears had the longest way to go in the division, but they caught up. I really think that you look at the roster, and provided this coaching staff is what we think it's going to be, and Ben Johnson is who we think he is as a head coach, they're right there in the thick of things with everything else. So I guess I'm once again saying the NFC North is going to be the toughest division in football. Hopefully that translates to the offseason, or the postseason, I should say, this year. Right.
Yeah, it did not last year, that's for sure.
It didn't, but I mean, this was, you know, it took 15 wins to win this division last year. And so hopefully we'll see that again. And it's going to be a dogfight this time. Too.
It's always interesting, that conversation of like, is it iron sharpening iron, or do the teams like almost like wear each other
cannibalize out each other? Yeah.
Like just kind of slaughter each other through the course of the season by the time you're just limping into the playoffs. And I guess last year was more limping into the playoffs, but it was a really fun division all throughout the course of the season. And then of course it wasn't come postseason time, but all four of these teams are going to be back fighting. And I'm really excited to see what this division brings in 2025. And of course beyond. Carmen, I cannot thank you enough. I love these conversations so much, just kind of getting a league-wide view of where the division's at, obviously including the Packers. I know you've got a lot of amazing work coming out. Again, we don't know when this is exactly going to air yet, but anything you want to plug on the way out as we get out of here today?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just, it's easy enough to keep track of social media, Twitter, and Blue Sky. I'm still trying to make Blue Sky. We're still trying to make Blue Sky happen. And then I'm doing a lot of work with Marquee in Chicago, so you will see kind of a lot of Bears content if you are interested in keeping up with that team from the South. But other than that, FoxSports.com, it's really league focused at this point. I'm really kind of high level stuff and league wide. So yeah, just go ahead and check out my social media at Carmen V.
Find her at Carmen V on all social media. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Carmen and I today, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.